Welcome to The Marketing Commute, a podcast that explores the roads taken and the lessons learned by truly world-class Australian marketers. I'm Mike Boyd, and joining me on the commute this time are Andrew Baxter, Board Director, Senior Advisor and Marketing Columnist at The Australian, as well as Carmen Becker, partner at KPMG Australia and leader of their CMO advisory practice. In this episode of Season 3 of The Marketing Commute, we're very lucky to be joined in the studio by Susan Coghill, the Chief Marketing Officer of Tourism Australia. Susan has had a very diverse and global career from working in the US, Asia and now Australia, both agency and client side. We'll be chatting to Susan a little later in the show. Okay, team, what's caught our eye this week?
Well, for me, we've got a bit of a tourism-led show, and there's a couple of great articles that popped up in the last few weeks around Tourism Australia. One was the announcement by the federal government in the budget not so long ago that they've put aside over $200 million for the tourism marketing around the recovery, not just from COVID, but also from some of the bushfire-affected areas. The other one was a couple of announcements to the Tourism Australian board, one in particular, Katie Page, the chief executive of Harvey Norman, and obviously Katie has a strong marketing background, so it'll be interesting to hear all about that a bit later on.
And what's caught my eye is the US election campaigns that are going on. So we saw one the other day about Joe Biden being compared to a zombie and Trump not having a dog, which makes him not a nice person. So the campaigns are extraordinary in the way they behave and what they put in them. And I'd love to do a session on them in one of our podcasts, just to have once we see who wins, go back and look at the sort of campaigns that led to that win. And would you believe it's also coming to Australia? There's an ad put out by Grilled where they've actually compared, put Trump in it and compared McDonald's burger to a Grilled burger. So it's even coming here, even though we can't vote.
It's amazing.
What about you, Mike?
Well, my eye, look, interestingly, I saw an alert pop up on my phone only the other day, just looking at, comparing the fortunes in terms of share price of one major global advertising network and the other of one of the new digital advertising networks. And one was at an all-time high, the other was at an all-time low. But I think the big thing then out of that is that Pinterest this week, announced their sort of their results and, smashed every expectation and what the street was hearing, revenues of $400 million, EBITDA of $93 million, and, share price that started the year at $19 is now somewhere around, in the early 60s. You can just see the momentum with these sorts of brands and these sorts of platforms, particularly with us all at home. Platforms like Pinterest and so forth are really, finding an audience, and therefore the advertising dollars are flowing.
Yeah, and I think, Snap has had similarly good results, and obviously TikTok has had huge uptake during, the last 6 months or so, and I think they're heading in close to a billion active monthly users on TikTok.
And doing the link with Shopify now to make sure you can purchase through TikTok is a great idea.
Yeah, which is, I think e-commerce is the big winner out of all of this. I mean, Pinterest is the same. They've got now the ability to see things on a board and purchase it. It has to be all about the purchase. That is what, the digital economy must be.
Well, look, it's great to see some of those brands. I mean, Pinterest was sort of just floated around for a period of time, and it just seems to have taken off more recently.
Well, do you use it?
I don't. I did when it first came out, but I don't now.
Well, here's a really good example. So my wife's an interior designer, and she now gets briefs from her clients that include links to Pinterest boards.
Oh, yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So they go, here's our living room, and the client has, put in all the photos and things about, what they want in their living room or in their bedrooms or bathrooms. I mean, from that point of view, it's a fantastic tool that then, enables so much more business, which I think is just brilliant.
Yeah, great for recipes as well and ideas, so Halloween ideas for
birthday
kids.
Ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, in season one and two of The Marketing Commute, we talked to close to 20 Australian marketers who have or still are doing some pretty incredible work on the global stage. And our next guest fits perfectly into that cohort. Susan Coghill is the Chief Marketing Officer of Tourism Australia. It's an organisation that markets to many, many countries around the world and, of course, domestically. Susan grew up in California, is an Australian citizen as well, and has lived here for well over 15 years. But before heading to our shores, she had an amazing career in advertising in both LA and Singapore with some of the world's most famous advertising agency names, which we'll talk about. She then continued that trend when she arrived in Australia working for agencies such as Publicis Mojo and Wybe and TWA and then the Campaign Palace. And then in the early 2010s, Susan shifted across to the marketing world, becoming the head of advertising at Westpac, then had a similar role with Qantas before joining Tourism Australia as the general manager of creative content and campaigns. And then in mid-2019, Susan became their CMO. We're really looking forward to exploring Susan's journey in advertising and marketing. Susan, welcome to The Marketing Commute.
Thank you. Very happy to be here. Very honoured to be your first guest of your third season.
Very good.
Welcome.
Now, we love going back to day dot. What kick-started your marketing career?
Well, as you said, I actually started off in advertising. I was in Los Angeles, had finished my uni degree, was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. My sister was working in an agency. She sort of pointed me in the direction of account management. She thought it would be something that fitted my personality and, my style. And I started working at Team One, as we were talking about earlier, Carmen, shared experience at the illustrious Saatchi agency. But I quickly moved over to TBWA Chiat Day at a really important moment, I guess, for the agency. And that was when the Apple business came back into Chiat Day. And I was a junior burger on the account. I was there as we were starting to launch the Think Different campaign, as we launched the first iMac, the first iBook, et cetera. So that was really my launching pad. And it really was quite, a formative experience for me. It shaped my outlook on branding, on communications, and, that has lessons that have stayed with me through my whole career.
Yeah, freaking, that's amazing. Amazing start. Yeah.
Well, that would have been really interesting working through that campaign, because that was one of the strictest campaigns in terms of design elements and scarcity.
Yes.
Did you work closely with the creatives? Did you see that process happen? Did you think of it?
To be completely transparent, I was a junior burger. Yeah. I was obviously very young when we're talking about the late 90s. So, but yes, look, it was a big team, a very collaborative team, and Chiat in the late 90s was just a hotbed of creativity. It wasn't just Apple; they were doing amazing work for Nissan. If you remember the Barbie and Ken spot. Yeah. If you remember the Taco Bell Chihuahua, the Yo Quiero Taco Bell, amongst other things, So it was a hotbed of creativity. It was quite inspirational to be there at the time. And with Apple, it was, every day was a lesson in branding and in design, a lesson in strategic choices about what you say no to and what you do pursue. It was a foundational part of my career.
And do you think that was the turning point or a pivot point in your career, or was there some other time when you really felt that your journey took a really big change?
Yeah, look, I think for me, my career has been a mix of my own of finding opportunities in my career, but also sort of personal adventures. And I think I had a couple of, S-curves along the way in my career, And certainly the first one was when I moved to Chiat Day. The next one would be when I moved to Asia, and I was working at BBH in Singapore. And it was my first time living and working outside of the U.S. And having that type of a regional job. Wow. So understanding an entirely different market, working at another creative hot shop like BBH, and learning their approach to strategy, for example, as well as creative. Mm-hmm. The next sort of S-curve jump, I guess, was moving to Westpac. That was when I moved client side. And I wanted to do that because I wanted to get closer to the fire. I wanted to be a little more influential in the direction of the brand and the marketing. And I felt that I could only do that when I moved client side. But I guess it all sort of has consolidated for me at Tourism Australia, where I'm able to bring, that client experience, the creativity, working internationally,
Many of the guests on the Marketing Commute begin their careers in Australia and then run off overseas and start, shooting the lights out all over the place. You've done a bit of the opposite.
Yeah.
Obviously found yourself in a global marketing role here in Australia.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more about some of those markets. Like, I would imagine, heading into Singapore is the first market that you've, out of the US that you've lived in and worked in. I mean, that must have been a real eye-opener, back in the day.
Yeah, look, it was. I would say that I've sort of always been a bit of a traveler anyway. I mean, even quite young, I went to, when I was in high school, I did an exchange program to France, and I was determined to do it. I had applied for the program. I got in. I spoke to my sisters about it, because at the time, my sisters were my guardians, and they're like, why are you going to France? And I went, it just didn't really make sense. I went back. I applied for a scholarship. I went back to my sisters and said, okay, well, they're going to pay for it. Can I go now? So I kind of had that dogged determinism in me kind of very early on. So I did my exchange in high school in France. I went, I did my semester in Paris when I was in uni. So I'd lived and been outside. And actually, when I was at Chiat, I started on the U.S., on the domestic side of the Apple business. But soon that Think Different campaign was starting to roll out internationally, and it really needed some management and some guidance. So I created a role for myself within that team, starting to manage the Apple brand as it rolled out globally. And so I was working with our offices around the world. I knew people in Singapore. I had those relationships. So look, I found myself in Singapore. I had a base of knowledge and understanding, I guess, of that market and a bit of Asia. But the learning curve was, steep, but wondrous. I felt that I was learning something every single day that I lived and worked in Singapore, and I really enjoyed that.
I want to just touch on some of those eight. I mean, you know, look at the agencies you've worked for, man. Chiat Day, BBH, you know, Mojo and Campaign Palace here. I mean, they were all brilliant agencies, and you were there pretty much when most of those were at their peak, right?
I got lucky. Or it was me, I don't know.
What were some of those, you know, the things you noticed, the differentiation of each one? Because often, you know, we all say that agencies, you know, can be similar, but clearly those all had their own positioning, their own strong culture. Just some of your observations on the differences between each of those.
You know, look, you're right. And I think it's become harder and harder, by the way, for agencies. You know, having sat through pitches over the years, you know, and seeing agencies try and differentiate themselves, it is really, really difficult. But you look at you look at a Chiat Day, you look at a BBH, for example, you know, or even a Mojo. These are actually, you know, same with client brands. They have a real strong sense of who they are. Mm-hmm. They have a strong sense of heritage. They work to a strong set of principles, and that is really borne out through the work. So I guess the advice that you would give any client that you have or any brand is what these agencies, I guess, are kind of living and breathing themselves, and that is part and parcel of their success and why they're each still so strong today.
And along this journey, did you have mentors or people that meant a lot to you that helped guide you, besides your sisters, who sound amazing, by the way? We all want to meet your sisters. But was there anyone that really influenced you or gave you some great advice? And is there anything you can share with everybody?
Definitely. Look, first of all, I would say I think everybody needs to find their own personal board of directors. I think that rather than relying on any one singular person, I think that finding a diverse group of people who can give you advice across a spectrum of topics is really important. And that board of directors is going to change over time, you know, as you move through your career in different jobs. So I've relied on different people. Early in my career, interestingly, and then she came back in my life when I moved to Australia, but at Team One, Marianne Bess, who I think you crossed paths with at Saatchi, she ran the America West Airlines account, which is what I worked on when I was at Team One. Mm-hmm. And she was just this amazing, she was the perfect account person. She was the she was a great partner to the creatives. Clients loved her. Clients trusted her. She had that firm but fair but fun aspect to her. And then when I moved to Australia, so she was at Team One. When I was there, I moved on, obviously, to Chiat Day and my time in Asia. When I moved to Australia, I was working at Mojo. She was actually at Saatchi here in Australia, and we sort of reconnected, and she remained a bit of a guide for me, I guess, as I moved into this market. You know, in my current job, I can't speak highly enough of Pip Harrison, our managing director. She has also been a real mentor for me in terms of the tourism industry. She's a longtime tourism expert, and I learn from her every single day.
I mean, if you were mentoring someone in the early stages of their marketing career, so flip back, I mean, what would be some of your first few lessons in that sense?
Yeah, I would. I'm going to give two pieces of conflicting advice, if I can. The first piece of advice would be to have a bit of a plan. You know where you want to go, invest in yourself, give yourself some structure. I kind of feel when I was agency side, I kind of went from opportunity to opportunity, and I was lucky because it built towards, again, the personal adventures I wanted, but I ended up at really great, amazing creative agencies. But I feel if I was a little more planned in my approach, perhaps I would have moved up a little more quickly. The other thing would be education, I guess, in that bucket as well, because there's never been more resources available for young people now to avail themselves of. You know, all the online training, you know, the mini MBA, Scott Galloway's strategy sprint, all that sort of stuff is just so readily available. Throw yourselves into it. Really give a shit about what you're doing. The other bucket of advice I have, though, would be to be willing to take a chance, be willing to take a lateral move, be willing to chase that adventure sometimes, because you never know what might come of that.
Now, everyone's careers are not necessarily surfing rainbows. challenging moments. What have been those moments where, you know, you've just really had to
think? December 2019, January 2020, all of 2020.
That's why I should have caveated that.
Obviously. Look, I would say, going back to the GFC, you know, when I started at the bank, we were, you know, within a couple of months, we were sort of cutting our budget there. So scrambling to make the case of why we needed to continue to invest in our marketing budget at the time was incredibly important. And, you know, to be honest, it was probably laying the groundwork for a lot of the business cases we're making now around continuing to invest through this crisis.
as in bushfires, international borders closing, local borders closing, you've had to really pivot your marketing in a dramatic way. And we're using that fun word pivot again.
Yes.
But it's in this situation, it's extremely relevant.
Yes.
How have you done that? And how have you and your team actually been able to change your plans so quickly? And how did that come about?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I'd say probably the most important thing is we do have a really strong sense of our reason for being at Tourism Australia. And I don't mean that necessarily in some overly lofty sort of way. I think that, you know, every brand needs to know the reason for being, whether it be, you know, making lots of money or saving the world or somewhere on that continuum. And I think sometimes, you know, a candy bar just can be a candy bar. Consumers just want that. For us at Tourism Australia, understanding that we serve the tourism industry, you know, an incredibly important industry. As the crisis unfolded, there was a lot of cries for support on supply side from the industry. So think business continuity planning, grants, etc. That just isn't our core competency. So we really leaned into what we do best. We pivoted to domestic quite quickly. We actually haven't been in domestic for about 8 years or so. Mm-hmm. So, you know, within days of the worst of the fires, we had to set up a new unit, you know, within our team to start the domestic planning, rolled out a new campaign within weeks and started rallying the industry. So yeah, it's been quite a journey, but because we knew exactly the role that we played and how we could make the biggest difference for the industry, finding that pathway forward was relatively easy. It was a lot of work, but it was relatively easy.
Mm-hmm. I just want to pick up on something you said there, because I've been quite heavily involved in recent years with one of my chair roles in the Cairns market funnel. Mm. I mean, you know, I can, depending on the stats, it's a hugely reliant on international tourism.
Much more than many other parts of the country.
Yeah. So that's going to be a really, you know, that's not just for Tourism Australia, but for Tourism and Events Queensland, also, you know, Far North Queensland Tourism. And, you know, just maybe not even specifically about that, but you're clearly thinking about some of those areas hardest hit.
Absolutely.
And what are what's some of the thinking around that?
Yeah. So, you know, as we look at our challenge across Australia and we look at how do we help support the industry, we're certainly looking at those areas affected by bushfires, directly impacted, but we have to look at those areas indirectly affected by the bushfires. And those are the regions that are so dependent on international visitors. People tend to not travel the same domestically as they do internationally. Internationally, you tend to spend money on a bigger trip. Mm. It feels a little more special. You spend your money on experiences. You go to exotic places. Here, you know, when you're in your home country, it's often more of a flop and drop type of holiday. So we are trying to encourage Australians to get out and go to those parts of the country that are maybe a bucket list that they say they want to go to, but they haven't been to. Mm. We're trying to get them to invest in those experiences. So it's not just laying on the beach, but it's actually getting on that dive boat and going out and seeing that amazing Great Barrier Reef. Every Australian should be out there seeing that. So these are all some of the things that we're looking at now and that are playing into our marketing strategies going forward.
Yeah. What were some of those? I mean, you must have learned a lot through bushfires, COVID. I mean, what were some of the key lessons now that you're starting to look backwards a little bit? What were some of the key lessons from a marketing point of view that came out of that time?
Oh, yeah. There are many lessons, and you would have heard everybody talk about things like the world has accelerated 10 years in 2 weeks or something like that. And, you know, the rise of digital again and e-commerce, et cetera, has never been more important. And that is all certainly true. I would say the importance of building a case for creative and innovative marketing every single day, not just when you need to in a crisis, is incredibly important. We're leaning into content. We're leaning into PR remains a really strong one for us. Social media, which has been a really strong channel for us for many years, we're leaning into that a bit more. You know, working with our partners just to try to stay top of mind with them as well, making sure that we maintain, you know, the faith and trust of our trade overseas is incredibly important because they will shift their business as quickly as they need to, you know, to other markets. So for them to see us engaging with them, but also having a presence with consumers is really important. We just have to tell our story in a slightly different way because we're in a new world.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that we've adopted you as one of us now. Oh. I know. No, didn't you say us all the time? I love it. Very proudly
Australian.
One thing I just want to pick up on, I do think the tourism industry is one of the more complex from a stakeholder management point of view, right? I mean, you've got got local tourism bodies, state tourism bodies, you've got tour operators that you need to work closely with, you've got the hotel chains, the airlines. Just to you know, for some of the people out there listening, just, you know, managing that stakeholder engagement as a very senior marketer, maybe just tell us a little bit about that.
Look, it is challenging, but I'd also say you kind of have to look at those stakeholders as people you're going to learn from. I would say every time we present something or we enter into a dialogue, they share with us something, some aspect of the business that I haven't seen or heard before, maybe I'm not understanding. So I think if you come at it with, you know, a bit of open mind and open heart that you're going to learn from them as well, I think then you can appreciate the process. It is hard work, if I'm honest, you know, and at a time of crisis, people need more communication and engagement than ever. But it's part and parcel of the job.
Yeah,
we know what we're signing up for.
And what about brand, Susan Cockhill? What's the road ahead for you?
The road ahead for me? I still have a massive challenge at Tourism Australia and in the industry. I am a bit head down, bum up at the moment. And I feel, I feel incredibly fulfilled, I guess, by what I'm doing. It's incredibly important. It's incredibly personal. In the tourism industry, there's something like 300,000 businesses across Australia, most of them mom and pop. We make a difference for them every single day. I'm really committed to seeing that journey through and making as big a difference as possible for them and learning as much as I can along the way, because again, every day is a crash course, I guess, in crisis management and brand management.
Susan, thank you so much for joining us on the Marketing Minute. A fascinating journey for yourself. And just great to see, again, just world-class marketing from Australians and Australian brands. So well done both to you and the team. And thanks for being on the Marketing Commute.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much for having me. I've really enjoyed this.
It's lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Marketing Commute. Thanks to our guest Susan Coghill from Tourism Australia, to my co-hosts Andrew Baxter and Carmen Becker, to our producers Wing Yu and Frankie McGrath, to the studios here at the University of Sydney Business School, and to Visual Domain, our new partner for Season 3. You can find the Marketing Commute in all good podcast networks, and you can read more detailed show notes and get links from each episode and find out more about our guests and presenters at our website, themarketingcommute.com. See you next time.